Hey, you're listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Matt Dorman.
And we're going to get right into it. Matt, tell us, what is your hot take?
Yeah, here's my hot take. The modern web is held together by duct tape. And most agencies, I think, are layering it on more and more. You've got bloated statics, quirky CMS setups, SEO band-aids, performance patches. They're all stitched together by teams that prioritize the launch, I think, over longevity. So we build dialed-in systems. It's not about being flashy at all. It's about being stable at 2 a.m. when the site traffic spikes and your content team needs to push an update without calling a dev. So I like to say, duct tape will get you past the demo, dialed in gets you through a product cycle, and still looks good after version 4.
I think that's really important because as an entrepreneur, right, sometimes I am quite literally duct taping my whole life together. I'm trying to build things for the first time. And a lot of times for lots of us, that website, the first one we build is the first thing we've ever done because we, you know, couldn't afford to or didn't know how to connect with a real developer to build that. But I see this even in massive companies, like companies who should know better are still kind of like duct taping it together. And when I work with companies on this kind of work, I find it's because they have someone who is making decisions without thinking about the holistic experience. So they say, oh yeah, swap that out, move that over, change that thing, without realizing that there's a holistic experience that they are sacrificing for the sake of one little, I'll use parentheses there, change.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's fine when it's like one or two things. It's typical, like duct tape works great. Gets you through something, gets you onto the next thing. It's when you don't take it apart and reapply it, replace the part, replace the, whatever you did to put the two things together. We do come in quite often on big enterprise companies. Okay, well, we might need to start over a bit or at least go backwards for a little while.
And, you know, one of the things that I think people forget about, too, is your website is still your first impression. Like when you have customers coming to decide whether or not they want to do business with you, you don't even know they exist yet necessarily, because they haven't filled out a form, they haven't connected with anyone, you don't even know their name. But your website is really your first impression. So if you were at a convention or at a conference and you had a sales rep who was making a terrible first impression, you would stop them from doing that, right?
Yeah.
And yet we let our website kind of be our first impression, and even though it's not the best.
Yeah, I think the thing also with the website, unless you're monitoring it constantly and actually know like all the pieces of it all the time, like even simple websites have 7-8 pages now. It used to be a 5-page website, but like you've got in blog posts. So like a personal conversation, you know, oh, you got something sticking out on your shirt. Someone's going to tell you that, right? If your website's broken, your form contact form is broken, or a typo or something like that, no one's going to tell you. They're just going to move on and go to the next one if it's a bad enough impression. Or if there's a number of things that add up, especially. And they never come back.
Well, I just think of like small things. Okay, you have a link that's broken. That happens to the best of us, right? Right. Something happens. But you have a typo. And depending on your business, I may or may not forgive that, right? So my business is in consulting. And if you are careless enough to make a typo on your website, how can I possibly trust you to advise me on incredibly important decisions if you're so careless on that typo, right? Yes, you spelled one word wrong. I always struggle with restaurant personally. I have to like really think about it. And so, yes, I struggled. I misspelled restaurant or whatever. Yeah. But that's going to make them wonder subconsciously whether or not you can be trusted with bigger things than typing out words.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're a consultant for the restaurant industry or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That would be real embarrassing. I literally have to go through it. I just found a typo last night in a project I was working on. And it was like something really stupid. And I was like, oh, well, that was cool. I better go back and change that because nobody wants to see your research reports include typos. But also,
I've found type, not, I mean, we found them on our website every once in a while. We don't do content. So that's one way. But we're obviously, we should have a level of professionalism. I definitely found them more in proposals, which is when you use a proposal again for something else and even look at like, we I sent this out like 4 times.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens.
Things get rushed. I mean, that's the one thing, like regular things, regular workflow running a company. we're kind of not the greatest at doing our own stuff.
Right. We're not all great at drinking our own champagne, right? We're too busy. I always tell people it's like the doctor that smokes or the personal trainer who's overweight, right? You're good at helping other people. You're not always necessarily the best at yourself. Yeah. And the other thing that I see too is, you know, when you're building this website, when you're doing this holistic experience, it's your first impression. I think it's also important to really understand the priorities of your customer in that experience. So like I was talking to a client, for example, who they sell primarily business to business. They sell to white collar professionals. They have prioritized their desktop version of their site because the people who are buying from them aren't on mobile.
Yep.
But if your customer is on the go, then you should build for mobile first. But you have to know enough about your customer and what they want and how they experience the world in order to do that. So take us through that process. If someone is listening to this and they're like, okay, my website kind of sucks. Where do I go from there? And how do I make sure that I don't just duct tape something together so that it feels holistic and cohesive and like a really good first impression?
Yeah, I think, well, if you can take it personally from a first impression, right? Like look at some people don't look at their website at all. Like they put it up one time and they know their contact info and they're dealing with the clients, their customers all the time, and they never go back to look at their front facing website. So that's one step, just looking at it from a fresh perspective. You can get a friend to do that too, just to get an idea of like what are we solving? Like these are things that you can do before going with an agency of any kind and working the agency. Because they'll give you an audit. A lot of places will give you free audits. Like we have performance audits and things like that for like true actual performance issues. They're hard to get like if there's duct tape involved, let's say.
Yeah.
Because that tends to overlap a few things for what we're trying to look at. But from a marketing agency's perspective, they can look at it and they're like, well, you say you're solving these problems for these people, but you don't say how. You're not telling them the right story. So getting some kind of audit, or you, even if it's yourself, over two areas.
I want to talk a little bit about the difference between a website that looks good on the front and a website that looks good under the hood, right? Because I can design a really lovely website. Okay, well, not me specifically, but people that I know can design a really lovely website that looks really great. Yep. But takes forever to load, always kind of feels like that duct tape feel, right? And I think that's a part that a lot of people spend so much time on the look and they forget the feel that you have when you have the website. If it takes me 2 seconds to load your About Us page, I'm going to wonder, is it my internet? Is my internet not working? Or is this just like total crap?
Yeah, I think performance is one thing, but I think a lot of the times, most sites can be built really nicely the first go. And this is usually because there's so much, you have so much focus, you're doing everything right the first time. Yeah. Put it up, even on the, smaller scale things like Squarespace, Wix, those types of platforms, right? They're really good for getting a site up and doing it right the first time. It's that second, third, fourth iteration of, now I need to add this, now I need to add, some type of gallery of slideshow and images, like portfolio images or things like that. And as you add those one after the next, that's where I was kind of getting towards that fourth or fifth iteration of it, things are really going to start to break down if you're not going through and looking at the entire site as a whole. This is part of we only build custom built websites. We build on those platforms for sure, but we're building as a whole ecosystem, entire system. So these things are planned out. Like, oh, we need a gallery. Okay, fine. We're going to put a gallery in and it's going to be on how many pages? What's the actual need for the gallery? Is it because I need to have 5 images? Well, we can have 5 images scrolling down the page because if they're all mobile, who cares about the gallery? People are just going to scroll. So looking at it at a holistic level all the time, that's really hard when you're in the weeds, in your company, and I just need to add the one thing. I just need to add the one thing, basically.
Yeah.
And when you go back to it, it's like, well, now the whole thing is broken. Like fonts are different. The padding's all over the place because I just keep adding the component from the new plugin or the new template. And no one looks at it at a holistic level of like, oh, well, it used to look like this, and it was perfect when I started.
I would love to get your advice on, you know, if someone is listening to this and they're saying, oh no, I have duct taped the heck out of my website or my CMS or wherever I am, you know, trying to prioritize my business. What is the first thing you would have them do? Like, what should someone do if they're hearing this conversation and a little bit worried?
Well, I mean, it depends on how long they've had it there, right? As far as work, like if you've noticed your business, like your sales leads are dipping down, that's a big problem at that point. If you've just added the one thing and now your site's broken, that's a different type of scenario where it's like, all right, things are going to go downhill soon, and depending on how big a business is, right? You may need to start over, which sounds bad, but again, if you're a small business and you're running out of one of these platforms, you could start over and build the entire site again in the day without any extra resources. Or you could bring in, you know, some type of developer, agency, something like that, and they can start fixing these pages. Again, that's a decent level. Or you decide, well, I'm at the point where I need someone to manage this all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you need to bring in someone, and they're going to build another platform that they can manage and maintain all the time, 24/7. It's always going to look exactly the same, no matter what you add. So there's kind of three different levels, I would say, depending where they're at.
So in reviewing your background and kind of prepping for this conversation, I see in your profile that you really have a specialty with manufacturing, which I think is really important, because I'm going to stereotype here for a second, but I've never really thought of manufacturing as the types of people who need the flashy, the right, interesting, the sexy kind of design. Yeah. But the more I've learned about that industry in particular, there's so much sophistication in their technology. They're way more sophisticated than you would expect. And I think that requires a certain level of like technical infrastructure that you just don't necessarily see in most industries. So tell us a little bit about, how do you connect that stereotype, or disavow me of that stereotype, and connect it with what those types of customers who are connecting with manufacturers want to see and experience the UX of these websites?
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty much spot on. We were trying to kind of niche down in a couple of industries specific to things that we're personally interested in. My partner, she and I, very interested in slightly different verticals. I'm on the manufacturing side, but we saw a lot of manufacturing sites like way outdated, and we thought, well, this
right, like straight out of the 90s.
Outdated. Oh yeah, very much. I mentioned this. We have a podcast where we review websites, and this is where we started to look at them, like just really critiquing some of these. Like, I felt really bad until, but then we were like upgrading them just quickly on the podcast. Like, it doesn't take a whole lot to go from that to really good. I've actually focused a little bit more since probably what we said to you, more on the overlanding car camping, I would almost call experience of like car and automotive manufacturing for products. So those sites are much more current. They're typically selling higher end products to consumers versus a lot of manufacturing or B2B. Or not even like they're not even using their websites for that. They need an address basically for someone to come up for shipping and receiving.
Right.
So we've gone that route where they actually need something that looks really good in there, and their marketing effort matches that, where they're putting out content all the time.
I do think though that even though some of those websites I would say are more like perfunctory, something you have to have, yeah, because you feel like you have to have one, even B2B buyers are still consumers,
right?
Right. And so like, even if I'm a B2B buyer, even if I'm, you know, buying for my business, I'm still a consumer somewhere else. And I do think that thinking about our buyers as consumers first can really make a difference and help you stand out, whether you're in manufacturing, healthcare, or a true B2C, you know, industry.
Yeah. I think that level of expectation is higher across the board, right? Like you, at one point it was fine. You know, you expect the manufacturing company, like a CNC company, to have a certain level of company, because it's like their dad's dad built them up, or not that far.
Right.
But like it basically further down the line, it was a site in the 90s that was built and it's still there. And but sites are so easy to put up, really nicely designed, like with design systems already applied for current and modern devices needs. We're not even, hopefully we don't get into AI, because that's a whole different topic of like having sites for AI specifically, because you have to have all the questions answered on your site, right? You have to have those, so that now people that are only using AI, LLMs and things like ChatGPT, and you're going to type in a question, your result needs to come up in there somehow, not your website. It needs to be a link to your website. That's almost gone, not quite gone, but in the next year or so, if you're just trying to get people to know about your company, that's all you need, essentially. But that still means you need a website that is very functional, very high performant, and actually integrated with somebody's systems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't even want to go down the AI rabbit hole, because I'm sure that that could be a conversation in and of itself. I had someone else on the show who basically said, like, you need to start writing your website for AI readers rather than human readers. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't really want to, though, but I understand. But do I have to? Like, right. So anyway, that's a whole can of worms. We don't even have time to open. So if I'm hearing this, we've decided to go back. We've decided to scale back. Are there any tactics or strategies that I can employ to make sure that I don't have to redo this, like, strip down, rebuild process every couple of years? Can I iterate and evolve my website without duct tape?
Yeah, yes. If you do the process of actually reviewing for every change that you're making, and every not adding a blog post, like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, restructuring the homepage or adding the slider gallery or things like that. When you're adding those things, take that time, take that extra hour to look through the entire site and evaluate it. Because that's where, when you fix the one thing specifically for the problem that you just created, you're now adding potential issues. But if you fix it like across the board and you make sure that it's globally applicable, then you're not really adding, we call it technical debt. That's the more technical term, but the duct tape to the site. You're actually, you know, making this, it's not even a fix at that point. You're now adding features that are actually going to improve the site overall.
Is there any like analysis or like threshold kind of thinking of, okay, you know, we've started with our homepage, we've got five items, five elements on the site, and okay, now we're up to 8 and now we're up to 10, time to cut back because 8 is our max threshold. Is there any kind of like thought process that we should be considering when you're kind of auditing your changes?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is somewhat more on the marketing side of like, if you haven't captured their attention by like 3 or 4 almost paid, like if you're talking desktop, like full things, maybe 4 or 5, but beyond that, you're going to lose their attention anyway. So if you have 7 or 8 thing buckets of information on the website, on the homepage specifically, that's an issue. For us, it's performance, right? So typically, if you're throwing a bunch of images at the 7th and 8th one, it's like, that's never going to be seen. And it's going to impact the first thing just as much as the last thing. There's ways of getting around that. But in general, you're adding to page weight. So if you're attuned to like looking at the whole picture, you can look at your performance metrics and making sure you're under, you talked about 1 or 2 seconds. That's fine, but it's really under 0.5 seconds. Like it's, or even 1/3 of a second, like that barrier of, if I can't see whatever that first tagline is in 1/3 of a second, which is basically instant, then there are problems that you should be looking at. It's probably because you put the 5th, 6th, 7th thing on the homepage that people probably aren't going to look at it.
Well, like 1 to 2 seconds doesn't sound like that long, but it really is in today's modern world. Like I get real annoyed when I have like no service and I'm on mobile data and it takes a second for something to load. And I have to remind myself, like, I remember the days of dial up where it took, you know, 1.5 hours to send a file. And so I have to like chill myself out a little bit, but a lot of your customers aren't going to give you that benefit of the doubt, especially with that infrastructure. And the bigger you get, the more complex you get, the more difficult your infrastructure gets, and the more likely you are to have that tech debt. So better to start with that clean mindset.
Well, if you think of the 2 seconds, you know, that's one page, fine. And then I clicked another and it's another 2 seconds. And then I finally got to the contact page and that was another 2 seconds. And then I did contact and that took 5 seconds or something, right? Like that now weighs on me. If I ever do get a response from a person that had that site, it's like, no, I remember. Like it was that.
Yeah. And I might give you that first 2 seconds, but I might not give you that second 2 seconds when it's actually the conversion point that you're trying to get me to. You know, considering all of the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be paying attention to?
Yeah, I thought about this a bit. And I follow a lot of coaches around agency space and do the old technology. And I think they all say, this is going to come out harsh, but they all say the same things. I think I go back to my managing partner at the last company I worked for. He ran all of biz dev and tried to teach me and our whole team about relationship building, that relationships are built for a long term and not a transaction, right? So it's really hard with a website. If you're just talking about websites, it's very transaction based. But if you're talking about individual space, he got into my head around, and he was all sales and marketing, really how to build that whole relationship of you're going to have someone there. They may come back to you in 3 years or 5 years, or they might come back to you every month for 7 years because you've now built the relationship up. You can give them the answers they need. And this was part of it. You're not going to charge them every time either.
And if someone is hearing this and they're really connecting with you, they want to build a relationship with you, whether that's for, you know, something monthly, something yearly, something like that, where can they find you online?
Yeah, for me, it's the best place, probably LinkedIn. So if you looked up Matthew Dorman, you're going to find me pretty quickly. I'm outside of Denver, Colorado. You probably multiple of us. Our website is called Endeavor, so ndevr.io. Really hard to spell, but it's out there as well. Definitely LinkedIn is probably the easiest place to find me. And I'm happy to make connections and answer questions for, like I said, for free. I'm more about the longer-term relationship.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Growth Signal. This was a really unique and interesting conversation.
Great. Thanks so much.